97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
All right. Good morning to you. Glad you're with us on this Wednesday morning. It's the fourth day of September, if you can believe it. Boy, time is moving along quickly here, getting closer and closer to our live broadcast on the 11th out in Eureka. And I hope people can show up for that. We'll be there for the whole show from 5 until 9 a.m. on September 11th. So show up down there. We're going to be raising money for the Focus Marine Foundation and trying to help them out. We'll be outside of Chicken Ellie's, where you can get some of the best breakfast you've had in a long time.
He's not lying. Oh. If you've not had Chicken Ellie's, it's like the home style cooking. It's good food.
Yep. And the whole community is rallying around this. So it's going to be a fantastic crowd, and we're looking forward to that. And it'll be the day after the debates. You can come down there and either celebrate or drown your sorrows in some biscuits and gravy or whatever you choose to.
I mean, what are we going to talk about that day? Because there's not going to be much from the day prior for us to discuss.
We're also not going to have much time for show prep because we'll be out late watching the debate, and then we got to be up early and drive to Eureka for the show. So we're just going to be winging it.
You never do that.
I never do that. It'll be real-time reaction to whatever happened in the debate. And Ethan, because Carl will not be with us and he'll be in Vegas, is going to have to collect all those sound bites for us for the next morning. Right, Carl?
Yes. Ethan is so happy about that.
Let's remind him about that again. He's like, way to go, Carl. You went out of town at the perfect time.
Well, Ethan Hannaford will be running the board, and Drew Young will be in the back. So it's going to be
all right.
Full here and there.
Fully staffed, regardless. So that's what we got coming up for you. By the way, Genevieve Wood is going to be along here shortly. We'll get to Genevieve. We've also got Aaron Evans at the bottom of the hour talking more about the fact that in some states, early voting begins this week. Not in Missouri proper. I know that. To check that, I think it's the 24th, maybe?
I think Illinois, though, right?
Illinois may be voting already. It starts this week. So we're going to talk more about that and what they're trying to do to RFK on some of these ballots with Aaron Evans at around 7:35 this morning. Stay tuned. And then, of course, next hour, we're going to get to Dave Weglars from Still 630. Business owner, victim of vandalism this past weekend that is not getting nearly the attention it deserves. We're going to get him in studio at about 8:20 talking about that. But right now, let's get to our top stories, please.
The Mark Cox Shortlist.
Since when does the vice president have what sounds like a southern accent?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Well,
Peter, we're moving on.
Oh, yeah. She has no idea what Peter's talking about when Kamala Harris decided that she had a different tone to her voice in Detroit than she did in Pittsburgh.
Mr. President, do you think it's time for Prime Minister Netanyahu to do more on this issue? Do you think he's doing enough?
No.
He's just bending over backwards so far to try to come to some sort of a ceasefire. That's not good enough for the Biden administration.
Somber remembrance and honoring of those lives that were lost. And I saw President Trump spending time at the invitation of these Gold Star families with them.
Tulsi Gabbard there commenting on what happened at Arlington Cemetery, what really happened when Donald Trump showed up at the request of Gold Star families to remember the service members killed at Abbeygate. And the Biden administration couldn't manage to do anything.
Well, the cops are so demoralized. This is why we have the crime situation in our country today.
Yeah, that is Heather McDonald, one of my all-time favorite guests. She's written some of the best books in America on crime, the real reasons behind crime in these big cities, the fact that progressive liberal policies and defunding the police have led us directly to the situation we're in today. And shout out to my friend Mark Reardon, because he had Heather on his show yesterday. I grabbed a couple clips from that because I think it's important. What she has to say is important because other people across the country don't have the guts to say what Heather McDonald says. I've often invited her on this show. She's not a morning person, and she's in a different time zone, so it's more of a challenge for her to do morning radio. But I love it when Reardon gets her on there in the afternoon sometimes. Specifically, one of the questions Mark asked her yesterday is the fact that The Board of Aldermen in the city of St. Louis has voted to rename a street after Michael Brown.
Mm-hmm.
The kid at the heart of what happened in Ferguson destroyed the city's reputation, destroyed many of the city's businesses, the reaction to his shooting death by Officer Darren Wilson. And we just covered this during the 10-year anniversary of Ferguson, that despite all the demands for justice, nobody ever found that the officer in that case did anything wrong. Mike Brown died because Mike Brown robbed a convenience store and the cops got called, and then he fought with the officer and tried to take his gun. We all know the story, right? Reardon's question to her was, what do you say about this when we have city leaders who then want to name streets after people that caused all of these problems? I mean, it's called the Ferguson effect, and it's happened in cities all across America, including Minneapolis, where Tim Walz is from. Listen.
Well, the cops are so demoralized. This is why we have the crime situation in our country today. It's not just your local idiotic councilmen who are glorifying thugs. Michael Brown was a thug. He had stolen the cigarillos. The reason there was any interaction with him and the officer was he was resisting arrest and trying to grab the officer's gun. It's a tragic statement about the current condition of civil rights agitation in our country, that the people that we're honoring are inevitably criminals who were resisting arrest.
And the big lie, and she drives this home so well, the big lie that police target black people to shoot them. That is the excuse in the George Floyd riots. It was the excuse that somehow Mike Brown got targeted by this police officer in Ferguson. It was the police's fault, not the criminal's fault. Somehow it had to go back on the police. And she takes these FBI statistics and tears them apart. And here's what she reminded America about Governor Tim Walz, the current vice presidential candidate for the Democrats, and what happened in the wake of George Floyd's death. Listen.
We look away and we blame the cops. It's absurd. In Minneapolis, you had Tim Walz saying that the riots were a result of racism. He didn't call in the National Guard to put them down because he didn't want to offend blacks because we know the cops are racist. This is a typical statistic. In 2021, there were 309 blacks who were shot. One was shot by a cop, and that cop was facing somebody who was shooting at him. That's 0.3%. 0.3% of all blacks who were shot in Minneapolis in 2021 were shot by a cop, and that is absolutely typical. And say,
did you know that statistic?
I've heard similar
statistics.
I didn't know that one specifically, but I've heard similar statistics that just obliterate that argument that people try to make.
She blows holes in their lies all the time, which is why I respect what Heather does so much. So I just want to play that. Kudos to Reardon for getting her on yesterday afternoon. All right, coming up, we're going to get to our friend Genevieve Wood from the Heritage Foundation. Aaron Evans is going to talk to us right after that about the early voting that's about to get underway around the country and what the implications are. Do we have enough safeguards in effect to stop what happened in 2020? We're going to be back in just a minute.
The stars at night are big and bright, deep in the heart of Texas.
Our friend Genevieve Wood, senior advisor there at Heritage Foundation, back with us this morning. Genevieve, how are you?
Hey, good morning, Mark.
Great to have you back. You know, I was just thinking, I'm trying to think back over the many years now that I've been doing this for a living, and of course, as a reporter before that, it seems like every time there is talk of a government shutdown, somehow the Republicans take the blame for that. And here we are facing a potential government shutdown in September before the most important election of our lifetimes.
Welcome to politics 2024, right? But you got the history. You're spot on. You're right. No, Congress comes back next week, and they basically have 3 weeks to get everything done that they've not done all year. And as usual, you know, as opposed to passing individual bills, appropriating money for this department and that department, they just continued not to do it. And what often happens, as you well know, is that, especially in election year, they all want to go home because they want to be campaigning. And so they want to try to pass something quickly. Or we get towards the end of the year, and it's like deadline, and everyone wants to go home for Christmas. And they pass what's called an omnibus bill, which is basically everything in the kitchen sink gets thrown in to not only fund the government for next year, but add all these additional items to try to get everybody to vote for it. And what we think needs to happen this year, talking with the Heritage Foundation, is that in the next 3 weeks, they need to pass what's called a continuing resolution, which doesn't increase government spending. It freezes it at this year's levels and says, we're going to keep the same budget we had this year, which is still too much. We'd like to see it cut. But for now, freeze it at the levels it is now. Go to the election. Let the American people select a new administration. And then next year, let that administration and the new Congress set the budget and set the spending levels. And if we get a conservative majority, meaning a conservative president and conservative House and Senate, that could be a really good thing for the budget next year. And it goes to your point of, like, do conservatives really need to hang that around their neck going into an election season if we're trying to shut down the government? I don't think so.
Yeah, no. And, you know, the thing about it is I understand they're going to try to maybe attach that to the CR.
Yeah.
So then Senate Democrats, there's no way they're going to support that. But I still don't think the Republicans get away from the blame if that happens.
Well, but if they say it the right way and get in front of this, they can make their Democrats say, oh, we don't want to fund the government because we don't want to make states have to make sure that it's only American citizens voting in American elections. Like, let's make Chuck Schumer say that.
Well,
right?
he'll say we were discriminating, right? They'll flip the script and say, well, it's because you're discriminating against people trying to exercise their right to vote, even though they're illegal and they shouldn't be voting in the first place.
Yeah. They'll flip it. I do think that line's getting a little old with all that the American people have seen in terms of people coming across the border, the crime that's been up. People, I just think they see that's not really what this is about anymore. But you got to make the case. And oftentimes, Republicans aren't great at making the case.
Yeah, this is a good point. You know, yesterday I saw Fox, maybe Ben Laura Ingraham was interviewing a there's a group called Auto Workers for Trump, and I'm glad some of them recognize the very real risk to their industry. But, you know, this guy's out there saying, listen, if the federal government's allowed to put these mandates, these EV mandates on the industry, they're going to go bankrupt, and then we're all going to be out of a job.
It's absolutely right. And, that's going to affect, look, if they get through passing through these regulations and trying to make every, new car, over 60% of new cars in the next 8 years have to be electric vehicles, that's going to hurt everybody. Because if you don't want an electric vehicle, too bad for you. So that's number one. But for people who live in states like Michigan, where they produce cars and where the big employers are, that's the business they're involved in, manufacturing. They've run the numbers. They realize it doesn't work. And you already have huge companies like Stellantis, not a name many Americans know, but they actually own Chrysler and Dodge and,
right,
car companies that you know. They've already said, look, they announced this month or in August, we're laying off 2,500 employees. And where are those jobs going to go? If they ship them anywhere, it's probably going to be to Mexico. But nonetheless, the point is they've run the numbers and they realize we make Ram trucks. Guess what? Those things won't work under these vehicle mandates. So no more trucks, and we're going to ship those jobs somewhere else. As you guys know, it also puts us in a war against up with China in terms of energy, because who makes all the electric energy around here? It's China.
Mm-hmm.
They want this green energy because they're the producers of it. Even though they don't use it, they sell it. They get countries like the U.S. to buy into it.
Mm-hmm.
But they themselves import a lot of our stuff.
And then I was going to say people are then forced to have these EV charging stations. You know, it is ridiculous.
Yep. Yeah, it's coming.
Which are run by what? Oil and gas.
Yeah, that's right. it's a transfer station is all it is for the coal burning power plant to transfer power to your battery. That's it.
That's right.
We're out of time, Genevieve. Thank you so much for your time, though.
Thank you, guys.
You bet. I direct people to dailysignal.com. Some great articles on there, including that EV mandate story. You know, I have a Dodge Ram. I pulled my 6,000-pound trailer to the lake this weekend. Could not do that with a battery-powered truck. It might make it part of the way, and then I'd be stuck at a charger
for 45 minutes
or longer.
Charging
if you didn't
it.
Get a high-speed
yeah.
charger. This is insane, is what it is. Did you know early voting starts this week in some states? Yes, it does. What is the impact of that? We're going to kick it around with Aaron Evans when we get back here in just a minute. Stay tuned.
I gotta thank a union member for the 5-day work week. You better thank a union member for sick leave. You better thank a union member for paid leave. You better thank a union member for vacation time.
A San Francisco born and raised liberal who speaks on occasion with a southern accent. It just busts out of her. I'm not quite sure where that came from. Speaking of the vice president and former President Trump squaring off next Tuesday, you might be surprised to learn how early voting starts in some states around the country. We got Aaron Evans on the phone with us this morning, president of Winning Republican Strategies. And Aaron, good to have you on. How are you?
Hey, it's a pleasure to be on. Thank you. Doing well.
Absolutely.
How are you this morning?
Oh, doing well. Thank you very much. You know, I was looking at a list of early voting states. It looks to me like sometime in about a week and a half or 2 weeks is about the earliest early voting in the country. Am I missing something here?
No, yeah. I mean, Pennsylvania obviously is a key state for Republicans and Democrats. I mean, it's kind of one of the top battleground states this cycle. And that's September 16th. And even in Missouri, I mean, you guys actually start with excuse on September 17th. So, I mean, there will even be people voting, you know, in Missouri before the first presidential debate. And so if they cast that first ballot on the first day with an excuse on why they need a early vote ballot. So, you know, I think that there's a lot at stake in this election. It's going to be very close, and early voting is going to be a really key part to whoever wins.
Yeah. I've not been a fan of the early voting. I mean, I think unless it's controlled, like I think one of the problems, correct me if I'm wrong, in Pennsylvania and some of these other places is they lost chain of custody on some of these ballots that were brought in the middle of the night. They couldn't prove where they were from. If the person whose name on it is actually, if the signatures matched, you lose a lot of that with absentee vote by mail kind of voting. And I don't feel like we've gotten a good grip on that around the country. How do you feel about it?
It definitely varies locality to locality. I mean, there are some localities that are a total disaster, and then there are some that I would feel extremely, confident in their processes, and you will see that disparity around the country. I will say one of the things that there's two aspects, actually, to this, both sides of the coin. One, which the RNC is really doing right this year. I mean, they've invested in more attorneys than they've had in the history of this country to focus on shining sunlight in the dark corners. And, they're already challenging some things in court this early to make sure that they're fixing some of these problems before they occur and they're on call and being proactive. The other side of that, too, though, is from the campaign side, even with the problems that may still exist in the system that the RNC attorneys are trying to solve, it's vital that each campaign still competes and leverages early voting as well. We've got to work the process while we also shine sunlight on the process at the same time. One of the things we really saw in the midterms, the races that were in super tight races that squeaked out a win on the Republican side, the one common denominator, they all performed and competed with early voting.
Yes.
The races that lost these tight races, every single one of them had a common denominator, and that was early voting cost them the election. Mm. And so, you know, I think it's vital for campaigns to let's shine sunlight, but we also still have to compete in that realm.
I do understand why there's hesitation with some of this and just making sure there are safeguards in place, especially from the conservative perspective. But to your point, Aaron, I think that is something we have to really push as conservatives, because I think this could really make the difference. And you think about how people make plans to vote on election day. There's an emergency that comes up. You're sick. There's just some reason why you can't get out to the polls those days, that specific day, I should say. And then you haven't voted. I mean, people make all sorts of excuses. So I feel like I'm trying to change my mindset even now.
Oh, absolutely. Look, and the other insight from the midterms that's very relevant is the number one demographic. We talked about a red wave. We all, almost convinced ourselves it was going to happen. Polling showed it was going to happen. Democrats were afraid it was going to happen, and it never happened. And so the number one demographic that did not show up at the polls in the midterms was middle-aged working Caucasian men who would have voted overwhelmingly Republican. And but these are people who have jobs. A lot of them have commutes. They have debt. They have families. They have responsibilities. And things happen. And look, if you're as busy as I am, and I know you guys are, I'm voting early this year because I'm always in some other random state on election day because of my job. But ultimately, to your point, well-meaning people who would vote, in the way that's necessary to save our country, don't vote because life happens. And mm-hmm. I think it's vital. I mean, unless you've made every election for the last 30 years and you're 100% confident you're going to make this one, early voting is a really good way to lock that vote in and make certain that your voice is heard in this pivotal election cycle.
Well, I know the Heritage Foundation has got a grading system for how states have done when it comes to election integrity. Missouri is near the top. I think they're in the top four or five in terms of what they've done to stop some of these problems, like, I don't know, drop boxes where you just go by and drop off a handful of ballots all at the same time. I mean, that's just insane to me that we ever allowed the emergency of COVID to let that happen. But do you know of any instances where they're going to be allowed to do that again this year? I mean, are there blue states that are still allowing just random ballot drop-offs with no chain of custody?
Yeah, there's definitely multiple states that still have ballot drop-offs. Several states have gotten rid of those in the last couple of years, thankfully. I mean, obviously, California is always, Harris's home state is pretty much any radical crazy idea. They're always the prime poster child example of a state that embraces it and claims it's great. So, you have everything from ballot harvesting to drop-offs in California. I think that to your point, Missouri definitely is one of the better states in the country. And, as someone voting in Missouri, I think, your listeners should have very good confidence in the things that your state has put in place to ensure that their ballots are counted and secure. And that's something to be thankful for, in Missouri.
Well, I'm glad people are keeping an eye on it around the country for sure. Aaron Evans, thank you for your time.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. President of Winning Republican Strategies. So he's obviously keeping a close eye on things. In case you're wondering, here are the Missouri. Here's the important Missouri election information that you need to know in terms of when you need to get your the voter registration deadline is Wednesday, October 9th. If you're not registered, right, you can do it by mail. It has to be submitted by October 9th. You can do it in person an in-person request Friday, November 1st. It says here for discharged military returning for deployment. There's a special day built in there too. For those folks, absentee ballot return deadline is election day. It's Tuesday, November 5th. The absentee ballot request deadline is October 23rd. It has to be received by October 23rd. So you've got to pay attention to these things. In-person absentee voting, early voting in Missouri is Tuesday, October 22nd, although you can do it earlier than that, according to one of the websites we found here. And he
wrote, thank a union member for the 5-day work week. You better thank a union member for sick leave. You better thank a union member for paid leave. You better thank a union member for vacation time.
A San Francisco born and raised liberal who speaks on occasion with a Southern accent. It just busts out of her. I'm not quite sure where that came from. But speaking of the vice president and former President Trump squaring off next Tuesday, you might be surprised to learn how early voting starts in some states around the country. We got Aaron Evans on the phone with us this morning, president of Winning Republican Strategies. And Aaron, good to have you on. How are you?
Hey, it's a pleasure to be on. Thank you. Doing well.
Absolutely.
How are you this morning?
Oh, doing well. Thank you very much. I was looking at a list of early voting states. It looks to me like sometime in about a week and a half or 2 weeks is about the earliest early voting in the country. Am I missing something here?
No, yeah, I mean, like, you know, Pennsylvania obviously is a key state for Republicans and Democrats. I mean, it's kind of one of the top battleground states this cycle, and that's September 16th, and even in Missouri, I mean, you guys actually start with excuse on September 17th, so I mean, there'll even be people voting, you know, in Missouri before the first presidential debate, and so if they cast that first ballot on the first day with an excuse on why they need a early vote ballot, so you know, I think that there's a lot at stake in this election. It's going to be very close, and early voting is going to be a really key part to whoever wins.
Yeah. You know, I've not been a fan of the early voting. I mean, I think unless it's controlled, like I think one of the problems, correct me if I'm wrong, in Pennsylvania and some of these other places is they lost chain of custody on some of these ballots that were brought in the middle of the night. They couldn't prove where they were from. If the person whose name on it is actually, if the signatures matched, they lost. You lose a lot of that with absentee vote by mail kind of voting. And I don't feel like we've gotten a good grip on that around the country. How do you feel about it?
It definitely varies locality to locality. I mean, there are some localities that are a total disaster, and then there are some that I would feel extremely, you know, confident in their processes, and you will see that disparity around the country. I will say one of the things that there's two aspects actually to this, both sides of the coin. One, which the RNC is really doing right this year. I mean, they've invested in more attorneys than they've had in the history of this country to focus on shining sunlight in the dark corners. And, you know, they're already challenging some things in court this early to make sure that they're fixing some of these problems before they occur, and they're on call and being proactive. The other side of that, too, though, is from the campaign side, even with the problems that may still exist in the system that the RNC attorneys are trying to solve, it's vital that each campaign still competes and leverages early voting as well. You know, we've got to work the process while we also shine sunlight on the process at the same time. One of the things we really saw in the midterms, the races that were in super tight races that squeaked out a win on the Republican side, the one common denominator, they all performed and competed with early voting.
Yes.
The races that lost these tight races, every single one of them had a common denominator, and that was early voting cost them the election. Mm. And so, you know, I think it's vital for campaigns to let's shine sunlight, but we also still have to compete in that realm.
I do understand why there's hesitation with some of this and just making sure there are safeguards in place, especially from the conservative perspective. But to your point, Aaron, I think that is something we have to really push as conservatives, because I think this could really make the difference. And you think about how people make plans to vote on election day. There's an emergency that comes up. You're sick. There's just some reason why you can't get out to the polls those days, that specific day, I should say. And then you haven't voted. I mean, people make all sorts of excuses. So I feel like I'm trying to change my mindset even now.
Oh, absolutely. Look, and the other insight from the midterms that's very relevant is the number one demographic. We talked about a red wave. We all, you know, almost convinced ourselves it was going to happen. Polling showed it was going to happen. Democrats were afraid it was going to happen, and it never happened. And so the number one demographic that did not show up at the polls in the midterms was middle-aged working Caucasian men who would have voted overwhelmingly Republican. And but these are people who have jobs. A lot of them have commutes. They have debt. They have families. They have responsibilities. And things happen. And look, if you know, if you're as busy as I am, and I know you guys are, you know, I'm voting early this year because I'm always in some other random state on election day because of my job. But ultimately, to your point, well-meaning people who would vote, you know, in the way that's necessary to save our country, don't vote because life happens. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's vital. I mean, you know, unless you've made every election for the last 30 years and you're 100% confident you're going to make this one, you know, early voting is a really good way to lock that vote in and make certain that your voice is heard in this pivotal election cycle.
Well, I know the Heritage Foundation has got a grading system for how states have done when it comes to election integrity. Missouri is near the top. I think they're in the top four or five in terms of what they've done to stop some of these problems, like, I don't know, drop boxes where you just go by and drop off a handful of ballots all at the same time. I mean, that's just insane to me that we ever allowed the emergency of COVID to let that happen. But do you know of any instances where they're going to be allowed to do that again this year? I mean, are there blue states that are still allowing just random ballot drop-offs with no chain of custody?
Yeah, there's definitely multiple states that still have ballot drop-offs. Several states have gotten rid of those in the last couple of years, thankfully. I mean, obviously, California is always, Harris's home state is pretty much any radical crazy idea. They're always the prime poster child example of a state that embraces it and claims it's great. So, you know, I mean, you have everything from ballot harvesting to drop-offs in California. But, you know, I think that, to your point, Missouri definitely is one of the better states in the country. And, you know, as someone voting in Missouri, I think, you know, your listeners should have very good confidence in the things that your state has put in place to ensure that their ballots are counted and secure. And that's something to be thankful for, you know, in Missouri.
Well, I'm glad people are keeping an eye on it around the country for sure. Aaron Evans, thank you for your time.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. President of Winning Republican Strategies. So he's obviously keeping a close eye on things. In case you're wondering, here are the Missouri. Here's the important Missouri election information that you need to know in terms of when you need to get your voter. The voter registration deadline is Wednesday, October 9th. If you're not registered, right, you can do it by mail. It has to be submitted by October 9th. You can do it in person an in-person request Friday, November 1st. It says here for discharged military returning for deployment. There's a special day built in there too for those folks. Absentee ballot return deadline is election day. It is Tuesday, November 5th. The absentee ballot request deadline is October 23rd. It has to be received by October 23rd. So you've got to pay attention to these things. In-person absentee voting, early voting in Missouri is Tuesday, October 22nd, although you can do it earlier than that, according to one of the websites we found here, and he referenced it just a minute ago. So in the state of Missouri, with an excuse, so you know you're going to have to work that day, you can vote as early as September 17th, absentee. Without an excuse, starting Tuesday, October 22nd, you can vote. In the state of Illinois, this is important, Thursday, September 26th, is when early voting starts in the state of Illinois. So
that conversation with Aaron makes me want to early vote. And I've never been a big advocate of that. Not like I've been staunchly against it, but I feel like in my head now I'm thinking, gosh, what if I'm really, really sick? I mean, I would have to be so sick that I couldn't physically walk. And I still might have someone drag me to the polls to be able to vote at that point, because this election is that important to me. But I don't know. I kind of want to early vote because in my head I'm thinking, I don't know, what if something happens and I can't go that day?
I would never discourage anybody. I would encourage people to early vote if you think there's a chance you're going to run up against something like work or an emergency that day. I like going to the polls on election day.
I do.
I like to see how the turnout is. I don't know. I just enjoy it.
I mean, when I walk into my polling location, I feel like I'm doing the most patriotic thing ever. I'm just so grateful I have the ability to vote. I feel like it's like, you're a grand, like I hear like a music playing in the background as I'm walking in there. It's patriotic music.
And you little sticker.
And I get my sticker. Yes, I love that sticker. I wish that they had the music blaring from a speaker. Like just patriotic music on loop. Like over and over again.
They should do that, but so no doubt some lefty would complain that it was biased or something.
Well, yeah, because what percentage of people who live in America hate America?
Yeah, a pretty large percentage on the left, I'm afraid. Kim, what do we got coming up? Kim and a whim right now.
Speaking of America, we know that the fentanyl issue is a huge problem. The number of overdose deaths is crazy. We've got to do something about it. But what blows my mind, so many people who are advocating for doing something about the fentanyl issue are the same people who support wide open borders. We're going to talk about that.
All right. Be right back.
Kim on a whim.
Kim on a Whim is proudly brought to you by Missouri Brush Control. Enjoy your land the way you've always dreamed of. Learn more at MissouriBrushControl.com.
Well, we need to sort something out right now, right here. All right. If you were listening before the commercial break, I was talking about this story. We're going to talk about fentanyl. We go to commercial break and Mark's like, Kim, you know how I think it was, I thought it was Chipotle and you said, no, it's Chipotle. He's like, it's fentanyl. Wait, see, what is it? I clearly said
fentanyl.
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 Fentanyl. That just sounds weird. I know how it's spelled, but in my brain, it's still fentanyl. I don't know why. I feel like I'm always going to call it fentanyl.
Fentanyl.
This is going to be like, gosh, what were we debating about? Come on, you guys. How can you possibly forget what we were debating about? Asterisk.
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 The asterisk.
Fentanyl.
Fentanyl. Whatever. I'm gonna
fentanyl.
Okay, fentanyl. I'm going to do my best. Thank you. I'm going to do my absolute best to call it fentanyl.
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 That sounds different. Fentanyl. Fentanyl. That's it. It's like N-U-L. That's how it...
Fentanyl.
Like you're playing two different pronunciations.
I don't know where Carl's getting his lines from. Webster.
I hear fentanyl and fentanyl. Clearly, it's not fentanyl. So either option, I'm wrong.
It's deadly.
It is deadly in the tiniest.
Fentanyl.
Now fentanyl. That's
is
British.
That French.
The fentanyl.
Fentanyl.
Maybe she's just doing the British version. Mark.
Could be.
Thank you. That is what I'm doing. Yeah, I'm like Kamala Harris. It's just my accent. That's why I call it fentanyl. Right? No. It's my St. Louis accent.
Any other way you're saying is wrong.
Whatever it's called, it's bad. And it's pouring over our border. And it's interesting because there's a group of moms out of Tampa and they actually paid to put up billboards showing kids who've overdosed and died because of fentanyl. And I think that's great. I think images like that where you see pictures of kids' faces who have been directly impacted by this epidemic, that is impactful, in my opinion, for people to see those. And I don't know their political beliefs, but I do think that so many of the people who are such advocates about handling that crisis as we should also support an open border here in America. I looked at some statistic that talked about how it was like 27,000 pounds of fentanyl came across the border that they found, by the way. That doesn't include the amount that the thousands of pounds that came over successfully and they never discovered it. That was from October 2022 to the end of September 2023. 27,000 pounds of fentanyl.
Could kill a million people. I mean, it's incredible how deadly it can be.
Right. So why are we not pushing? Why are so few people drawing, like connecting the dots there and realizing that to fix the fentanyl issue, you got to address the border.
Don't
buy Kamala Harris's lie that she told on CNN, the interview with Dana Bash, talking about how we tried as Democrats to do something about the border. And that mean Donald Trump, he shut that down. He told them not to vote for that. It's the Republicans. They're the reason we did nothing at the border. Baloney.
Not the border czar.
Baloney. You're the border czar. And guess what, Kamala Harris? You've been part of the Biden-Harris administration for 3.5 years. And what have you done? We've had record crossings. We talked to Griff Jenkins on a regular basis, and he confirms those numbers for us.
Right.
He's been at the border 1,000 more times, almost quite literally, than Kamala Harris, the border czar, despite her wanting to distance herself from that title.
It came up yesterday during the hearing in Jeff City of the fentanyl problem, because it's not just an illegal alien crime problem where they keep popping up, murdering people and raping kids across the country. It's the fact that nobody's watching as the drug cartels ship all this fentanyl over here that's killing our kids.
By the way, 75% of the people arrested in Midtown Manhattan, illegal immigrants. That's a new statistic that just came out.
Illegal aliens.
Illegal aliens.
Illegal aliens. It's not easy being an illegal alien. Right, Carl? All right. Coming up, we're going to get to Chad Pergram talking about that SAFE Act where you have to prove you are a citizen in order to register to vote. And they're going to try to slip it into the CR bill. We'll be back.
Get more at 971talk.com. Kim on a Whim.
Kim on a Whim is proudly brought to you by Missouri Brush Control. Enjoy your land the way you've always dreamed of. Learn more at MissouriBrushControl.com.
Well, we need to sort something out right now, right here. All right. If you were listening before the commercial break, I was talking about this story. We're going to talk about fentanyl. We go to commercial break and Mark's like, Kim, You know how I think it was, I thought it was Chipotle, and you said, no, it's Chipotle. He's like, it's fentanyl. Wait, see, what is it? I clearly said
fentanyl.
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 That just
sounds weird. I know how it's spelled, but in my brain, it's still fentanyl. I don't know why. I feel like I'm always going to call it fentanyl.
Fentanyl.
This is going to be like, gosh, what were we debating about? The, come on, you guys. How can you possibly forget what we were debating about? Asterisk.
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 The asterisk.
Fentanyl.
Fentanyl. Whatever. I'm going to
fentanyl.
Okay, fentanyl. I'm going to do my best. Thank you. I'm going to do my absolute best to call it fentanyl.
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 That sounds different. Fentanyl. Fentanyl. That's it. It's like N-U-L. That's how it...
Fentanyl.
It's like you're playing two different pronunciations.
I don't know where Carl's getting his lines from. Webster.
I hear fentanyl and fentanyl. Clearly, it's not fentanyl. So either option, I'm wrong.
It's deadly.
It is deadly in the tiniest...
Fentanyl.
Now, fentanyl, that's British.
French?
The fentanyl.
Fentanyl.
Maybe she's just doing the British version, Mark.
Could be.
Thank you. That is what I'm doing. Yeah, I'm like Kamala Harris. It's just my accent. That's why I call it fentanyl. Right? No. It's my St. Louis accent.
Any other way you're saying is wrong.
Whatever it's called, it's bad. And it's pouring over our border. And it's interesting because there's a group of moms out of Tampa, and they actually paid to put up billboards showing kids who've overdosed and died because of fentanyl. And I think that's great. I think images like that, where you see pictures of kids' faces who have been directly impacted by this epidemic, that is impactful, in my opinion, for people to see those. And I don't know their political beliefs, but I do think that so many of the people who are such advocates about handling that crisis as we should also support an open border here in America. I looked at some statistic that talked about how it was like 27,000 pounds of fentanyl came across the border that they found, by the way. That doesn't include the amount that the thousands of pounds that came over successfully and they never discovered it. That was from October 2022 to the end of September 2023. 27,000 pounds of fentanyl.
Could kill a million people. I mean, it's incredible how deadly it can be.
Right. So why are we not pushing? Why are so few people drawing, like connecting the dots there and realizing that to fix the fentanyl issue, you got to address the border.
You gotta shut the border.
Don't buy Kamala Harris's lie that she told on CNN, the interview with Dana Bash, talking about how we tried as Democrats to do something about the border, and that mean Donald Trump, he shut that down. He told them not to vote for that. It's the Republicans. They're the reason we did nothing at the border. Baloney.
Not the border czar.
Baloney. You're the border czar. And guess what, Kamala Harris? You've been part of the Biden-Harris administration for 3.5 years. And what have you done? We've had record crossings. We talked to Griff Jenkins on a regular basis, and he confirms those numbers for us.
Right.
He's been at the border 1,000 more times, almost quite literally, than Kamala Harris, the border czar, despite her wanting to distance herself from that title.
It came up yesterday during the hearing in Jeff City of the fentanyl problem, because it's not just an illegal alien crime problem where they keep popping up, murdering people and raping kids across the country. It's the fact that nobody's watching as the drug cartels ship all this fentanyl over here that's killing our kids.
By the way, 75% of the people arrested in Midtown Manhattan, illegal immigrants. That's a new statistic that just came out.
Illegal aliens.
Illegal aliens.
Illegal aliens. It's not easy being an illegal alien. Right, Carl? All right, coming up, we're going to get to Chad Pergram talking about that SAFE Act, where you have to prove you are a citizen in order to register to vote. And they're going to try to slip it into the CR bill. We'll be back.
Get more at 971talk.com.